fucking limo, you son of a bitch. No argument.
Hey, careful, man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Start talking and talk fast, you lousy bum.
We've been frantically trying to reach you, dude.
Where is my goddamn money, you bum?
Well, we... I don't...
They did not receive the money, you nitwit! They did not receive the money! Her life was in your hands!
This is our concern, dude.
No, man, nothing is fucked here.
Nothing is fucked?
No, man.
The goddamn plane has crashed into the mountain!
No, man, come on. Who are you gonna believe? Those guys are... We dropped off the damn money.
We?
I... The royal we, you know, the editorial, I dropped off the money exactly as per... Look, man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light, and, you know, has it ever occurred to you that instead of, you know, running around blaming me, you know, given the nature of all this new shit, you know, this could be a lot more... complex. I mean, it's not just, it might not be just such a simple, you know?
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man. New shit has come to light. And shit, man, she kidnapped herself. Well, sure, man. Look at it, you know, a young trophy wife in the parlance of our times, you know, she owes money all over town, including the known pornographers. And that's cool. That's cool. I'm saying she needs money, man. And, you know, of course, they're going to say they didn't get it because she wants more. Man, she's got to feed the monkey. I mean, hasn't that ever occurred to you, man? Sir?
No, Mr. Lebowski, it had not occurred to me.
That had not occurred to us, dude.
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingeldean.
We have an amazing relationship, and it's very physical. I mean, he still pushes all my buttons, and, you know, people say, oh, but he's so much older than you, and you know what? I'm the one having to push him away. Yeah, we both have so much in common. We both love soup, and we love the outdoors. We love snow peas, and... talking and not talking. We could not talk or talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Yes, it is. It's the Bob and Elvis Show, the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show. I'm Bob over here. That's Elvis over there. We're going to talk or not talk for the remainder of the show, aren't we?
Yeah, one or the other.
And the Big Lebowski. That's my favorite scene from the Big Lebowski. Next to, second actually, only to the marmot scene.
Yeah.
The marmot in the bathtub
Careful.
Scene.
I've got a beverage here.
And he's got the, you know, they're hustling him over, and he's got the jelly shoes on. And
yeah. Did I tell you, did you see that tweet of mine where when I was in the airport a few weeks ago, they repeatedly paged Jackie Treehorn to the customer service no. kiosk or whatever?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, somebody was getting punked.
Yeah, someone's been trapped at the airport for a while and needed to
exactly.
entertain themselves.
There's no way there's really a Jackie Treehorn.
No.
At the airport.
Speaking of real and not real, I'm told those jelly shoes that he wears in that movie are his. Are actually Jeff Bridges' jelly shoes.
Yeah, I would imagine he pretty much just showed up in, you know, whatever he was wearing that day.
He likes
soup. Feed that monkey.
Yeah. He loves to talk or not talk for hours. Mm-hmm.
That was Best in Show, wasn't it?
Best in Show, yes. And you know
second
what?
Favorite.
Yeah, but you know, I watched it. What was it? Maybe 4 weeks ago, give or take. It didn't hold up. It just didn't. It didn't. And I was kind of disappointed. It just was not as funny as I remember it being. Now, that said, there are some hysterically funny moments in that show, that movie.
Anything Eugene Levy does, I'm there for.
Yeah.
He's the anchor in all those mockumentaries of theirs.
Even the two left feet.
Yeah. Oh, that's hysterical.
He walks in circles. They call him Loopy.
He's just funny. It's one of those, like Fred Willard. I mean, you point a camera at Fred Willard and it's funny, immediately funny, no matter what.
Well, Willard's great as that's one of the best things about that movie is that final act with Fred Willard as the dog show announcer just being a complete imbecile.
Just being a complete,
has no idea. In serious news, and this is good, we could actually talk or not talk about this topic for the entire show, which is Egypt.
Something apparently is going on there. I haven't really been paying attention.
Are you serious?
Something seems to be happening there.
Yeah, something's afoul in Cairo. Evidently, there have been a few people who were killed today.
Yeah, it's getting rough. The pro Mubarak stooges are getting feisty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you say about it? Eventually these douchebags, these iron gloved guys, I mean, some of them we lay down with and some of them we don't, you know, we laid down with Saddam Hussein when it suited us, when he was the lesser of two evils. And then when we needed a boogeyman and he did something we didn't like, you know, now suddenly he's public enemy number one. Mubarak, since the Camp David Accords, we've had this tense, you know, this very fragile peace with Egypt, and whatever he said goes, and send him a shit ton of money and hope that those accords stand up and there's not another 24-hour war or whatever they do over there with where some Middle Eastern country, where some Arab country gets their nuts in a bunch and goes to war with Israel for, you know, 12 days, gets their ass shit can handed to them, and then we start all over again. So it's, what do you say? It's just a fucking mess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a mess. And it's, you know, again, we're going to have another post-Iraq invasion vacuum. You know, Mubarak gets up there and says, I'm out of here, but not yet. And the protesters go, well, that's sort of not why we're here, buddy. Time to pack your bags and move to Switzerland. And, you know, America says, maybe you ought to get out. But then we're like, well, Muslim Brotherhood, that's very scary because it's got the word Muslim in it. And it also has the word brotherhood in it. And, we're a little afraid of this. So, it's going to be – no one's shitting themselves like Israel, though, right now. I mean, that's what's really terrifying is Israel's got to sit there and knead their hands and you know, furrow their brow.
Yeah.
So, what do you say? It's good luck to those people. They're sick of getting they're sick of getting the foot up their ass and not getting their share of the economic, of the windfall. They're not getting it's not trickling down. I mean, that's really what a lot of this amounts to, is they're not getting their piece of the pie and they're sick of the security forces and you know, any leader that turns off the internet gets an immediate fuck you from the Dingleding camp. So, fuck you, Mark.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's just what I'm trying to figure out is what's going to happen in its place. I mean, what exactly? Yeah, I mean, the Egyptian people are tired of this guy. He's been in office for way, way, way too long. They don't like that he's, you know, in the pockets of the United States. I mean, what ultimately is going to come of it? I mean, there are several choices here. There's either some sort of Islamic law, some sort of theocracy that's going to take over, or it's going to be some ridiculously ineffectual coalition government run by al-Baradei.
Yeah, no, that's not looking – I mean, he's not a rock star over there. I think it'll be something in the middle, and I really don't think it'll lean towards theocracy because this really is predominantly a youth rebellion. There was a story the other day about how the young people, I mean, some very young people had taken over like the Egyptian Museum, like one of the core, you know, museums in the world. I mean, one of the top museums in the world, and they're making sure that there's no looting, that there's no, you know, that these things are being taken care of. And when I think when Mubarak made his speech, he got a little bit of his Allah on, and some of his more theocratic rhetoric got booed or called down. So this really isn't looking like an Islamist, you know, a scary Islamist thing. And it depends on who you read about the Muslim Brotherhood, which really is step, you know, which is more in line to fill in the vacuum, I think, than anything. And it sounds like they're not actually half bad. So I don't know. It really depends on, I think, like Iraq, it depends on what happens in the absence of the dictator, like how the military comports itself, how security, how secure the streets are, how commerce continues to function. We'll just have to see. But there's just shit nothing we can do. And everything we say, the American government, is going to be wrong, you know, until something happens.
Yep.
Until it gets sorted out. I mean, I don't know. But it's just spreading like wildfire throughout that region.
Yeah. But it's not the first time, and generally when these things have happened, they haven't turned out well. Yeah. And I there are a lot of people who are cheerleading it and saying that it's going to the demonstrations are going to lead to democracy and all of these great things, but and suddenly the Egyptian people and all throughout the Middle East, they're going to have, you know, jetpacks made of meat and chocolates thrown at their feet by their government officials, and it's not going to work out that way. I just don't. I hate to be such a pessimist about it, but it never does.
Well, I mean, I think Egypt, more than pretty much any other country like it in the region, is more prepared for Western style democracy than just about anybody. So, I mean, there's hope there. I mean, Mubarak wasn't a complete tyrant. There was, you know, Egyptian people had a certain mobility and a certain amount of freedom. His elections were retarded. I mean, they weren't elections by any stretch of the imagination. But I think they're more prepared for what we would consider to be democracy than any other country. It's just what happens to the peace accords with Israel? What, you know, the public opinion of Israel is shit poor over there. The complete country to country, you know, end to end country opinion of America is pathetic, right? It's bad right now. Very, very bad. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, coming out of what does the government in that country look like compared to what it was, and in respect to Israel and America, those are the two big, I don't knows. So, yeah. I mean, Israel might just decide to cast its opinion with, missiles.
Yeah.
I don't know. It may just be time to fucking evaporate that whole part of the globe. Ahmadinejad is loving this, though. It's like, hey, nobody gives a shit about me anymore.
That's right.
When does the revolution come in Iran? When does the people's protest come there?
They did it. I mean, they tried it and it failed.
Well, I mean, the one that sticks, right? I mean,
that one. Yeah. Well, what was it? 1979, 1978.
Yeah.
That worked.
Yeah. You know, here's another one of my Gump moments. I was listening to the guy that wrote Black Hawk Down wrote another book, Mark Bowden, about that revolution. It's called Guests of the Ayatollah, and it was about the hostage crisis. And when I was a kid, so I already had a tie to the hostage crisis, because when I was a kid, my dad, because he was in the business, he knew one of the hostages, Leland Holland, and who has since passed away. But I interviewed him by phone for a paper. I was in Toastmasters back then. I was a speech organization to give, you know, you write speeches and you give them. And so I wanted to give a speech about the revolution. And I'm like 10 at the time, but I wanted to give a speech about the revolution and about a hostage. So I interviewed him by phone for like 2 hours. So I wrote this paper. So I'm listening to this book on tape, because that's how I do most of my nonfiction reading, is by audible.com. So I'm driving home one night and listening to this story, and it mentions this guy, and I'm not going to say his name, but there was an African-American official at the embassy taken hostage. And the funny thing that the Islamists, the guys under, you know, the guys that took the the place hostage, the place, the hostage takers, were very sympathetic to American, African Americans because they, to African Americans because they thought that they were as oppressed as the Shiites were in Iran under under the Shah, and that they were this great oppressed class, and they actually let this guy go. And he went back to America. They let him go. Just it's okay. You're black, so you can go. He came back to America. Went right to like CIA headquarters and helped them plan that failed rescue attempt. Ugh. It wasn't his fault, right? But he gave him the entire layout of everything. Where the bad guys were. That guy's my dad's next door neighbor. I know that guy. He's my dad's next door neighbor. I've met him like 100 times. So I'm like listening to that on the radio on my headset. I immediately call my dad and go, was he? And my dad's like, yeah, I thought you knew that. I was like, oh my God. It's like that guy. It's like, I know that guy. It's so strange. Just that is very just odd. It's just one of those gump moments.
But yeah.
Yeah. They let that guy go because they sympathized with his blackness, which I thought was fascinating.
There was I have a gump moment, and I was just thinking about this because of the Middle East. The guy who used to cut my hair for a very brief period of time, but cut my dad's hair for maybe 30 years at Springfield Mall across from the cinemas there in the number 2 entrance in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
And his name was John. And there was like a barber shop across from that movie theater.
Hmm.
And that guy who cut my dad's hair, cut my hair at least several times. His name was John. Ended up becoming the personal barber. People are going to think I'm making this up. He became the personal barber for Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia.
Wow. How did that happen?
Bandar Bush, as he's more popularly known.
Yeah, right.
If you've seen Fahrenheit 9/11, it's Bandar Bush, that guy.
They got the special plane ticket out of town when
9/11
went down. Yeah,
Bandar Bush. He's been on Larry King like 90 times.
I don't remember there being a barbershop across from that.
Yeah.
Because I used to work at the big number 2 theaters.
Maybe it wasn't in the number 2. Maybe it was down there, the next entrance down that was closer to, it used to be what, Kensington Sports used to be there or something.
Yeah.
It was like another department store in the next entrance down. Maybe it was there. But it was one of
those.
Back
in the day, there was that shitty Chinese restaurant across from the big number 2. Remember it had like these ornate, like this huge ornate, like dragon column entrance. It was really shiny and scary looking.
And
like
then it became a Bennigan's
out front.
Yeah, and then it was a Bennigan's.
And then it was a Bennigan's. Yeah. I worked at that Bennigan's for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, and
pissed somebody off and got fired.
I mean, I think it was the next one down. But regardless, it was this guy. This guy suddenly is making $200,000 a year cutting Prince Bandar's hair, and that's his entire job.
That's awesome.
Anyway, so you know,
not quite as awesome as me buying pizza from the the guy that killed that guy.
But yeah, that was easily the biggest of your gump moments.
Yeah.
But going back to Egypt, here's the missing ingredient in all of this. They don't have a charismatic leader, and if there was and where was a revolution like this somewhat successful? It was successful in Georgia. They had a charismatic leader who was actually poisoned.
Yeah.
Oh no! It was Iranian. In Georgia. It was the Ukraine. It happened in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
And a former, I don't know, it was a former his political opponent, and I forget the guy's name, but he was actually really badly deformed. His face was basically blown away. As guys go, he's a pretty handsome guy. It turned into like the Toxic Avenger.
Yeah,
because he was poisoned.
Yushchenko, something like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Viktor Yushchenko.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, they fucked that guy up.
Yeah, but it worked there because he was sort of this charismatic leader who kind of stepped up and pushed this Orange Revolution along. I haven't looked at it recently. Looked at the status of the Ukraine right now, but I think he's still the leader of the Ukraine. I think he's still the president of the Ukraine,
as far as I know.
And
man, they turned him into fucking Madball face. Me, he just he looked like a fucking chia pet.
Yeah, he totally did. Yeah, I mean, he looked like his face was melting. He looked like one of those guys, one of the Nazis halfway through the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, but caught like halfway between,
right.
Like in the process of melting, and then it just froze up again. But yeah, I mean, he was poisoned. And then another time that it actually worked was with the former Soviet Union. They had Boris Yeltsin there to sort of be this great charismatic leader, this guy who everyone could, you know, prop up, and this was going to be the guy who was going to fill the void, and he made certain assurances that it was going to be a democratic style government, but you don't see that, and the closest thing to that is El Baradei,
yeah, but
in Egypt, but he's not at all,
and you got to be, you know, you got just the term charismatic leader should strike terror in the hearts of any history minded civilian anywhere.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, but I mean, recent history, we've seen some pretty decent or some successful revolutions like this, yeah, with a charismatic leader who turned out to be friendly, and that's, yeah, the case with both Russia and the Ukraine. The problem here is what they're going to get without one of these charismatic leaders who's going to take over from Mubarak is you're going to get this awful, awful coalition government that's going to lead to another strongman, but a strongman who's not necessarily nice to the United States. Mm-hmm.
Or
Israel, exactly. And yeah, so what we're going to have here is we're going to have a coalition government that's going to be made up of three factions, a theocratic Islamic faction, a secular faction, and sort of the third faction, which we'll just call the mystery faction. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what that would be. So there are going to be several groupings in this coalition government, and they're not going to be able to get anything done.
Yeah.
And the more groups they bring into this coalition, say there's like a young person's group that comes in, they prop up some representative government officials, and mm-hmm, and so what you have here is complete stagnation. There's going to be an inability to get anything done, which is then going to piss people off even further. Oh, yeah. And that's invariably when a dictator steps in and says, you know what? You want things to happen. You want the trains to run on time. You want your bread buttered. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to have, you know, an Al Sadr type character. He's Al Sadr, I think, is still going to be the guy who's going to eventually take over Iraq.
I'm just thinking, I mean, I'm probably wrong, but it'd be nice to be right, that I think these revolutions are mostly youth, you know, mostly propelled by the youth of these countries. And I really think those young people are not dictated by, their passions are not ruled by a thirst for theocracy. I really think they're as moderate, you know, it takes a radical to mount a revolution, but in their thinking, in their political thinking, I think in Iran, I mean, certainly the Green Revolution in Iran, and even though it wasn't successful, was their primary beef was with the Ayatollahs and the, you know, the bullshit theocracy and all the, you know, the Twelver nonsense and all that. I hope that that's what's, you know, I hope that's what's behind a lot of this stress in the whole region, is this sort of instinctual reaction against autocratic, theocratic rule. I would hate to think that they're slipping backward, that countries like Egypt will go backwards that way. Yeah. It doesn't seem like revolutions do that.
Well,
countries backwards.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to happen like that instantly. I mean, it's not. Yeah. What's going to happen is, say things continue to move as they appear to be moving, which is Mubarak stepping down in September-ish, and then there's an election. And so, well, there is a chance in the election that someone who's like Mubarak but not friendly to the United States could win that. There could be some sort of coalition government, and the coalition government is the more likely one. I mean, the coalition government is the more likely outcome of all of that. And that's going to be the step in between Mubarak and some unfriendly son of a bitch who's not our son of a bitch. It's going to be some, a strong man who hates Israel stepping in saying, you know, oh, what, by the way, I know you all are starving because the government can't get any fucking thing done. So I'm going to take care of that. I'm going to take care of you. Don't worry. Get behind me and I'll make the lights run again. I'll turn on the internet and we'll all be good. And so that's, yeah, the,
I, it, I think it really depends on the level of chaos that follows. This is a fairly peaceful so far. I mean, shots have been fired and people are dying, but it's not going to be an infrastructure crippling kind of revolution. And I mean, it really depends on how many of those trains aren't running, right? I mean, commerce and industry, those things are still going. They're still operating. So it really had, I mean, dictators and strongmen typically only arise from, you know, they're phoenix like from a big ash heap, you know, that from a big mess. And this one doesn't seem to be shaking down like it's going to cripple infrastructure and make the trains not run on time. So
yeah. Well, you don't think a big cumbersome coalition government will be.
Well, I don't know what it would be a coalition of. I mean, Egypt's not a deeply fractious society as far as, you know, religious. You know, there's not a big, like in Iraq, the whole Sunni Shia clusterfuck in a handbag. There's not any of that, or not as much, I guess. It's not, you know, split up into, as far as I know, into specific regions and territories and sectarian camps. So I just don't know what it would be a coalition of, you know, people that like Coke and people that like Pepsi.
That's all it takes. Then it becomes,
well, yeah, and it's democracy. It's, you know, you need strong men and dictators and douches like Mubarak happen in societies that are unprepared for true self-governance. I mean, that's just the reason you have dictators. And eventually I tweeted a quote from Frederick Douglass the other day about the nature of dictators and their time on their time in running things. And that's why invading Iraq was such a bad idea, because they just weren't ready for self-governance. They have an immensely illiterate culture like Iraq is simply cannot rule. If you're illiterate, you can't self-rule. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and Frederick Douglass said the limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of those whom they oppress. And that's exactly what's happening all over the region now, is they've had enough. But the question is now, are they ready for self-rule? And are they mature enough in a political sense, you know, for true democracy? And if a coalition government is the nervous balance that has to happen until they grow up and you know, are able to self-govern, then that's what we'll get, and we'll just have to see.
Yeah.
I just wish there was a better answer. I mean, I wish there was a black and white American response to this, where we could, you know, anything we said was the right thing to say.
That's impossible. Yeah, they just can't do
that.
Yeah,
it's just not. Yeah, there's. I mean, I think Hillary Clinton has been and will be a wonderful Secretary of State. I mean, I think she's been doing a really good job. I think she's really suited to it. So I just hope, you know, the wind is at her back and we make the right decisions, because this is really, you know, that douche, what's his name? The world is flat. Friedman is saying there's, you know, now he's saying BE before Egypt and after Egypt is, I think he's probably right. You know, this is really a turning point now. This isn't one of those little countries that's having a little fit. This is fucking Egypt.
So
pretty big deal.
And you know what's strange here? I'm just sort of stepping away from this conversation a little bit and looking at it from a bird's eye view. I'm actually being more of a Debbie Downer on this than you are, which is
unusual.
Kind of staggering.
I don't know. I think it's kind of time to. I think that whole region needs a roto route. I mean, it just needs a total, you know, a total enema. A people-led, and it may cause just massive turmoil and unrest. But I get the sense that these youth-led revolts have more, you know, have more upside and are ultimately better for the West, better for Israel, better for the region than if it were a sort of old-school Islamist. A revolt that, you know, like the one in 1979. I mean, I think what we're seeing now is the antipode, the opposite of that, is the counterbalance to the inflammatory, you know, because it's really done the people not a lot of good. I mean, yeah. That's why Iran, the people of Iran are so much more pro-Western than the government of Iran, because Iran, you know, the government is still clinging to the old school Ayatollah theocratic, you know, 1979 attitude, and the youth, they're like, we just want jobs and blue jeans and iPods. Yeah. That's all we want. So, well, you know, fingers crossed.
Here's what worries me about this, because I mean, again, this happens over and over again. There's something occurs. There's a revolution. There's a coup. It hardly ever turns out well, and I'm being a Debbie Downer about this, but I'm just very, very skeptical about the efficacy of any of this without that charismatic leader pushing it along, without him or her being that focal point, and being prepared to step into the vacuum created by the ousted government,
and like Lech Walesa. That's it.
Like Lech Walesa, exactly.
A good, you know,
another good example.
Example of that would be Lech Walesa and his solidarity movement.
Yeah.
I mean, he was extremely. I mean, he single-handedly, really. I mean, you know, did what he did, and he was that strong central leader, and people rallied behind him. And I mean, look how that turned out pretty well. Yeah. So, but you're, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I fear the charismatic leader model, because fucking Hitler was a charismatic leader.
Well, that's true. Yeah, so was Castro. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, so that, I mean, it could go badly, but you know, and when I say charismatic leader, when I say charismatic leader, I say charismatic leader that we like, you know,
who
yeah. Well, I mean, Lech Walesa and Boris Yeltsin and Viktor Yushchenko, those guys are guys we liked, you know. But what worries me here again is there was sort of this kind of atmosphere in the Middle East, or the United States and all of us sort of observing what was going on in the Middle East back in, what was it, 2003, 2004, when after the invasion of Iraq, you know, then there were elections in Syria, and then there was the, you know, they had elections in the Palestinian, the Palestinian elections, and the Bushies
well
and the Republicans were just going batshit about, oh, how great that was, and then suddenly Hamas is elected. What I don't want is this. I mean, this is the most annoying song in the world, probably. But if you remember this, this is that song by the Wright Brothers, Bush Was Right, and this was made right in the midst of all of those great, wonderful things happening in the Middle East. Bush was transforming the Middle East, and it was all going to be democracy and you know, getting jetpacks made out of beef. It was going to be this. This was it. So annoying. I mean, it's literally got the nanny, nanny, nanny.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to say the music, the bass line is nanny, nanny, boo, but what the fuck?
Yeah, it's just so annoying. These guys are just right, and I'm barely going to get through this, but I want to get some of the lyrics here.
Freedom in Afghanistan, say goodbye, Taliban. Free elections in Iraq, Saddam Hussein locked up. Some are staying underground, Al-Qaeda now is finding out. America won't turn and run once the fighting has begun. Libya turns over news, Lebanese want freedom too. Syria's forced to leave, don't you know that all this means? Bush was right.
Oh, God.
Bush was right.
Bush. Yeah, so I'm going to throw up now.
Oh,
but as you can see, there was that set of lyrics there. He's talking about Syria and Libya and all these countries suddenly going to be democratic nations because they're turning over nukes and they're having elections. And
barf.
And
I'd just like to make a personal appeal. If you're listening right now, Billy Joel, please sue the living shit out of those assholes.
That's right.
We talked about it on the show before about how one thing I cannot stand is that sort of faux patriotism and the, you know, the bullshit responses. Like I mentioned it once before about the JPEGs that were circulating, you know, the emails that were going around after 9/11 of the Eagle sharpening his talons, you know, and you're just like, oh yeah, you know, wow, we really showed them. We got a JPEG of an Eagle sharpening his talons. Woo, fuck yeah. No. I despise that kind of attitude.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I just wrote a sample chapter for my next book project, and I was all about that. It was all about the psychology of that patriotic fetish that happened after 9/11 at the beginning of the Iraq War and all of that. Yes. That period of time where America just generally went insane. I mean, they actually, Congress, the House of Representatives, actually passed a resolution changing the names of the French fries in the cafeteria to Freedom Fries. I mean, that actually happened.
Yeah, that happened. That's not a skit or a joke of any kind.
Right. The Republicans in the House of Representatives, they wasted your taxpayer dollars because they're such fiscal conservatives, passing a resolution about the goddamn French fries. The French fries. And the French toast, by the way. It wasn't just the French fries.
Freedom toast.
It was the freedom toast.
Fuckers.
Good God. And then these guys. And then not only that, we have Nanny, 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 these guys. Fuck them. Yeah. Go to YouTube. I'm not going to play the whole thing. I'm done with that. But if you want to see this whole fucking thing, if you missed it, just do a YouTube search for Bush Was Right. And then head to your nearest vomitorium, because
the group was obviously payrolled by like the Cato Institute or American Enterprise.
I actually thought it was some kind of meta joke.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was actually liberals spoofing conservatives and doing this thing, but no, they're deadly serious, which is really, really fucking sad. You know?
I was going to say, isn't it time for some bubble
juice? Some soap. Yeah. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis show. I'm Bob, that's Elvis, and this is Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com, or if you will, www.bubblegenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Lots of Valentine's Day specials happening. We're going to get to those in a little bit. But make sure, and I've been neglecting this, I've been a bad, bad podcaster. There's a promo code. When you go to Bubble Genius, you can get 15% off your entire order if you enter the promo code Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS. Do it. Do it. 15% off. You're going to turn down 50% off? You're crazy. It's hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. And this is their latest commercial.
Welcome to a Bubble Genius.
Hi, I'm trying to find a Valentine present for my boyfriend that's not too cutesy. Can you help?
I can show you sexy time.
Okay then. I'm just gonna... I thought this was bath and body, not...
Here is a sexy time.
Wow, edible massage oil and powder. Oh, its name is Sexy Time.
Sexy Time!
My boyfriend's gonna love this.
And Sexy Time for you, too.
Sexy Time for me, too.
BubbleGenius.com. Sexy Time.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Sexy.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Again, that is www.bubblegenius.com. The best goddamn soap you'll ever use. The best goddamn soap.
Uh-oh, this just in. Anderson what? Cooper knocked on the head in Cairo.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, CNN's Anderson Cooper said he was hit on the head by a protester Wednesday in the streets of Cairo. It was just one incident among a number of attacks on journalists covering the unrest. Now, see, I don't get that. I don't see any reason, if they know that they're journalists, for either side. You know, if either side knows, either side theoretically must think they're in the right, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even dictators think they're the good guys in their own story. So the press should never come under attack in any scenario. So that I don't, especially if these are, that would be a bad signal to me if the protesters are knowingly knocking beautiful, gorgeous Anderson Cooper on his noggin.
Yeah.
They would lose my support pretty quickly. If they're doing that on purpose.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I hope they hit him on the top of his head and not in his face area, because he's so damn cute.
Yeah. A beautiful, beautiful face. He's a
pretty, pretty man.
Yeah. How can we get Glenn Beck over there now?
Right. It never happens to the right people.
Right. Oh, that's because, man, Fox doesn't have anybody in the – they don't have foreign correspondents. You know, the network that had the most correspondents overseas – on 9/11 was NPR. Mm-hmm. NPR had by far the most foreign correspondents. Fox didn't give a fuck about. Did you see that clip going around the other day where Fox had labeled Egypt wrong on a map?
Oh, God.
They had it drawn in wrong. They had it wedged. They had it where Iraq is, for fuck's sake. They had it wedged in between Afghanistan and Iran.
Yeah.
It just absolutely. And Bex, did you see that thing about Bex ratings down like 48%?
Yeah.
In that choice demographic in the 24 to 52 or whatever, 48%.
48%.
That's a tank. That's a nosedive.
Yeah, not that it matters to Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch.
No, I mean, he's a loss leader anyway. He's not making him any money.
Yeah, no, because half of his advertisers dropped the show.
Oh, much more than half.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's losing money for Fox, but yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
I think it's true that his specific kind of rhetoric is going to start really losing gas now with the people that would typically watch him. It's just, you know, like I said before, it just can't sustain. It just can't keep going. I mean, there's no end game in crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, there's no logical conclusion to it.
Well, then, and it's getting, well, I don't know if this is actually crazier, but it was crazy in the first place. I don't know if it's any worse than it was than pouring gas or whatever, but didn't he have like a rabbit? He was holding a rabbit and implying that the president was a secret Muslim, and he was really going down the birther road with a rabbit and talking all, I don't know, with that googly-faced smarm or whatever that sarcastic voice that he does. It just, you want to reach in and you just want to... You know, you wish he had been in Anderson Cooper's place and just, ow.
No, he would never ever dare go over there and you know, have his bullshit, you know, conspiracy nonsense threatened by actual facts on the ground.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I was a bad pundit just there because I said something. I wished violence on someone.
Oh, sure.
But kidding. We can't fucking joke anymore.
It's a joke.
It's a joke.
The new civility.
Yeah. Please. It's a joke.
Stop whining.
Yeah. Anyway. So it's a shame. It's a shame Anderson Cooper got it. I was just watching Twitter before the show, and I had read that he had retreated up to like a rooftop or something and was broadcasting from a rooftop and not in and amongst the crowd. And that was an indication that things were getting sticky down there. But I guess he was back down in the crowd.
Somewhere where he got knocked in the noggin.
Ugh. I hope he's okay.
Poor Anderson. I love you, Anderson. He'll be fine. I love you, Anderson. he'll be fine.
And then just completely shifting gears, speaking of Glenn Beck, and, you know, there was that court decision down in Florida overturning healthcare.
Yeah.
And Judge this guy, Vinson. Yeah, Judge Roger Vinson. And in keeping with things we've been discussing on this show for several weeks now, or I would say actually extend that further for the entire history of this show, is the fact that these teabaggers just are entirely clueless about history. And this guy screwed up. Well, he overturned the entire law, and based around the individual mandate, which was a Republican idea. I don't need to remind you. It was a Republican. The individual mandate was purely a Republican idea. But you can't have pre-existing conditions without it.
Yes,
because people are just going to game the system.
They're just game the system. Yeah, if our government were capable of explaining things correctly to idiots, it would be that the mandate is actually a pro-business, pro-capitalist, anti-douchebag, anti-leech. It's anti the kind of people Republicans like to talk about when they talk about healthcare. You know, the leeches of society, the ones that won't work for it but want a free handout. It's anti them. It's, you know, go out and get it so you can't game the system. The system being the insurance companies and the private insurers, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know why we can't get it explained that way, but go after the mandate. Fine, fuck it. Let that percentage of the population that the Republicans despise, let them game the system right up to the point where they're, you know, their kidneys explode or whatever happens.
That's right. Just let how about this? This would be a great idea. Why don't we just have the Supreme, because we can go to the Supreme Court now. Let's just have the Supreme Court eliminate the individual mandate, and then we'll all fucking game the shit out of the private health insurance industry until they all go bankrupt, and then we can have government run health insurance in their place.
Correct.
There we go. There's your public option. There's the path to the public option.
Done and done.
What we don't want is the whole goddamn law repealed, because that would be a fucking disaster. That would be a human disaster, and it would be especially a disaster for the Republicans. But, I mean, going back to the individual mandate to lead into why it's a disaster for the Republicans, the individual mandate was a Republican idea. They don't – this guy forgets history. It was a Republican idea. How can they possibly – keep a straight face? How can they possibly look at their people in the eye and go, this is awful, this is an unconstitutional thing, even though it is constitutional, the levying of taxes, it's right there,
right?
Article 1, Section 8, taxes. But they forget this. They don't care. They don't seem to regard the fact that there are things that happened in the space-time continuum. You know, it's just, well, no, what is that? I don't understand that. That happened. Well, no, I mean, everything is now. Nothing was before. Everything is.
Right.
Whatever is happening now is whatever's important. Whatever looks good on a bumper sticker is what matters. History doesn't matter. And on top of all of that, you know, the guy screwed up the Tea Party. I'm talking about the actual Boston Tea Party. Which, again, this is a drum I've been beating for a couple of years now. Where the Republicans just, or the Tea Party, the actual lowercase T Tea Party, doesn't understand where they attain their name.
Yeah, they think they do. They take it from popular, you know, from the popular cultural understanding of it, which is everything from about 1767 to, you know, right up to the revolution was tax based.
Yeah.
Which to some extent is the truth, but
the
whole story.
Yeah, but it was taxes in the very political sense.
Well,
because what happened because it was the Tea Act of 1773. And those of you who have heard me speak about this ad nauseum you can go listen to another fucking podcast, because I'm going to go through it again. It was the Tea Act of 1773, and the Tea Act of 1773 was basically a massive bailout, a massive corporate tax cut for the East India Company, granted to them to save them from bankruptcy, right? They were pretty much going insolvent. Their tea was being undercut by smugglers and independent tea importers. Okay, so what happened was is Parliament said, "Screw this! We're going to give you you're going to get to pay zero taxes, zero duty on importing taxes to the colonies. So you can now undercut the prices of all these other suckers who are paying duty based upon the Townshend Acts of 1760 whatever it was 1767.
Right.
Okay, so that was the issue. So suddenly." The Indies, the independent tea importers, are paying a tax that was imposed years and years ago. Yeah. And they're still paying a tax, but the East India Company pays zero tax. So,
I mean, so ultimately it boils down to, I mean, there's a certain semantic to it, but ultimately it boils down to colonists having to pay something that otherwise they shouldn't if Parliament wouldn't quit fucking around with stuff. And ultimately it was a sort of a non-representational thing. You know, the tea company was getting preferential treatment and ultimately to the fuck you of the colonists, and on top of the Townshend Act and the Stamp Act and every fucking other thing, they're just like, you know what? No, we're not taking your dirty, ugly, awful tea. And they chucked it. And, you know, so.
But it wasn't directly taxes. They weren't going, yeah, it's the fucking taxes. What they were suggesting here is that it was unfair treatment of the East India Company, giving this massive corporation a huge price advantage over everything else. Yeah. And you have guys like John Hancock. I mean, he was a tea smuggler.
Yeah.
So they're pissed off from an economic standpoint that the East India Company
was
ultimately massive
to their economic misfortune that this happened. This massive crown based backing, this prop up, because without it, the East India Company would have just gone tits up.
Yeah.
You know, would have been stuck with millions and millions of pounds of tea that they couldn't unload. No.
So,
so yeah, I mean, it's not like they were all sitting around at Sam Adams' place going, you know, fuck this tea tax. It was it was more complicated than that. But ultimately, right. It came down to representation. And that's why my bigger beef with the Tea Party fuckers is that they tend to leave off the bottom half of the whole problem the colonists had, which was without representation.
Exactly.
You've got fucking representation, you clowns, you dumbasses. You may not like them, and you may – eventually, someday, and often come up on the losing side of the voting stick, but you got to vote just because you lost. It's like this fucking mayoral recall we've had here in Omaha, this recall this Mayor Suttle. The Tea Partiers got their dicks so bent out of shape over this guy and his spending, because Omaha was just tanking and we got this unpopular mayor, and they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money on this second election, and he won again. Oops. just sore loserism is all the Tea Party is just sore loserism. Retarded people who are angry at losing.
That's right.
There's no such thing as taxation without representation. You are represented down to your very county level. You have representation.
Yes.
In two different houses of Congress, you dicks.
Yeah.
So just suck it up and wait till the next election, you pussies. They're just babies.
Yeah.
That's 90% of the problem in this country is just we're just children. We're just whiny, bitchy, shit, stupid children.
Yeah. That's exactly
That's
right.
That's it. I've got my Social Security, but I don't want anybody else to have it.
I don't
want to pay for anybody else. Wah.
Human beings are naturally whiners. I mean, we're all bitchy to some degree. But what drives me batshit is when you combine the bitching and the whining with just a complete and utter ignorance to reality. And that's what I couldn't believe. This judge who could single-handedly be responsible for overturning healthcare reform. I mean, we're talking about that would include a tax increase. That would include, for the middle class having to pay $10,000 more per year in healthcare premiums. That would mean anyone who's above the age of 21 suddenly is dropped from their health insurance policy.
Yeah,
that would include the high risk pools that are set up now, that are in place now. All those people losing their health insurance. I mean, people who are dying of cancer, losing their health insurance. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't happen. Who knows how the Supreme Court is going to swing? It's going to be 5-4 in one direction or another. But regardless, this guy who doesn't even understand basic American history. He doesn't understand basic American history, and of course, this whole thing he says in his decision about the Tea Party, right, about the Boston Tea Party, is a nod to the Tea Party, lowercase t. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get that history, and he doesn't understand how it's applied, and yet he's deciding healthcare for 300 million people. Infuriating. And so what he doesn't understand here is that the Tea Party takes its name from people who were protesting against a corporate tax cut. That's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was the Tea Act of 1773 that precipitated the Boston Tea Party. And so the people who participated in that protest, who dumped the tea into Boston Harbor, those people were pissed off about a corporate tax cut. And the Tea Party... You see how incongruous that is? But it doesn't matter because they don't give a shit about history. The only thing they give a shit about is what looks good. What sounds good? Well, but not what looks good, because otherwise they wouldn't have those tea bags hanging off their hats. Or misspelled signs, for that matter.
Wear pantaloons.
Whatever sounds good and loud. Good and loud is what it needs to be.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the ultimate irony that a political movement theoretically steeped in original, American history is so completely clueless about it.
Yeah.
That their sweetheart can't name has to be pressed to name a single founding father by another completely ahistorical douchebag.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's terrifying.
So look at it. I mean, I'm not getting this information from some sort of moon bat left wing website. You know, I'm getting this information from the Boston Tea Party Historical Society.
Yeah.
I mean, just giving you my firsthand source, because there are many sources about this. This is the one where I'm getting it from. But just to prove to any Tea Party lurkers that I'm not making this up. This is the Boston Tea Party Historical Society. And if you actually looked up the words Boston Tea Party on Google, it'll take you right to it. I mean, it's all right there. It's all right there. And as you said, the phrase isn't, you know, no taxation, dot, dot, dot. It's no taxation without representation. So these are just all very basic history things. Crack open a book, folks, huh? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. You'll do yourself a favor, because then you won't look like fucking morons on top of being screaming, flailing babies. Anyway, speaking of screaming, flailing babies, do you see, and moving over to the topic of cable news, I can't wait for this. I hope this actually happens. Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah, I saw that about the behind the scenes at the news.
Yeah, it's an Aaron Sorkin or series that's been greenlit for a pilot. So we're just really early on, which is why this is one of the reasons why it was so tantalizing. It was such a tease because they haven't even made the pilot yet. But I mean, here's the story. HBO has just greenlit its first pilot from writer producer Aaron Sorkin. Few Good Men, The American President, The West Wing, Charlie Wilson's War, according to Deadline Hollywood. The project retains Sorkin with Scott Rudin, who produced Oscar nominees True Grit and the Sorkin-scripted The Social Network. Like Sorkin's Sports Night and Studio 60, the untitled Studio 60 with our friend Steven Weber.
Ding, ding.
The untitled HBO dramedy will follow people who create live TV, in this case, a cable news show. God damn, that looks good. Sorkin reportedly hung out behind the scenes at two MSNBC hours, Countdown with Keith Olbermann and Hardball with Chris Matthews, for research.
Yay.
Oh, that sounds outstanding. That just sounds so goddamn good.
Sorkin and HBO together gives me, that's reason enough to check in.
That's right. And if it doesn't get picked up, I want everyone to chip in, and we're just going to have Sorkin and the cast come and perform it for us live. Because it'd just be too goddamn good to get canceled or to not get picked up.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. And I still believe that Studio 60 would be going strong today if they had focused more of the show around Steven Weber's character.
The douchebag network guy.
Yeah. Because he was absolutely the most interesting character on that show. If you don't remember, there were two shows about a late night sketch comedy show. That came out at the same time. It was 30 Rock, of course, is the comedy, and then Sorkin's show, which is hour long drama, Studio 60, and Steven Weber played the studio executive or the head of he played the head of the network, but the show actually focused around Matthew Perry and Bradley Whitford's characters as sort of these renegade writers, showrunners who I don't know.
And the Bradley Whitford character was loosely based on Sorkin himself.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, sort of a recovering cokehead sort of a guy.
Well, here was the problem with that show, from what I remember. First
insufferable pontificating?
Yeah, there you go.
Well, yeah, that's what it was. Again, just about like in West Wing, the first episode, the pilot episode, centered around evangelicalism, just like in West Wing. But here, I think Studio 60 would have been better and bigger if it had reversed places with West Wing and West Wing had followed it, because the pontification, the sort of often insufferable pontification of an Aaron Sorkin as a writer is okay couched in political terms. When it's the White House and politics and Congress and talking about laws and things like that, I can swallow it that way. I cannot take it from a bunch of jackasses on a TV show, like, you know, from behind the scenes at an SNL type show. I don't want to listen to any of that. I just want to see wacky goings on and daring do's. I don't want to be preached at from that particular pulpit. That's why I just couldn't. I mean, it was well scripted, it was well acted, except for what's his face, who I can't fucking stand.
D.L. Hughley.
D.L. Hughley, yes. Out of that whole cast, you both absolutely cannot fucking stand that guy. When he's on Bill Maher, yeah. I don't know what I don't know what it is. I cannot stand him.
Well, his station is higher than his talent.
Excellent cast.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a great cast, and again, as I said, Weber was the highlight of that cast, and then part of the problem was they didn't focus enough on his character. I think that was the misstep with The West Wing, is they initially had planned to not even have the president in the show, and then they adjusted it when, you know, it was clear that Martin Sheen was such a compelling president, right? So, and I think that could have happened with Studio 60, where they focused more on Weber's character, and you're looking in through the eyes of this asshole head of the network. And then here was the other problem with that show. These guys were evidently geniuses, like comedy geniuses, Matthew Perry's character, Bradley Whitford's character. Together, they were like this uber Voltron genius, like this, you know, this giant robot of comedy that's actually several robots that snap together.
Right.
Here's the problem. And then one of the big plot lines, I think it was maybe the first episode, perhaps the second episode, they had to come up with this big welcome back sketch, this return to form. These guys have returned to this late night sketch comedy show, and they want to, you know, welcome themselves back with this big blockbuster, hilarious, brilliant sketch. And you know what it turned out to be? HMS fucking Pinafore. It was like
again with Sorkin and his fucking Gilbert and Sullivan
right.
Fetish.
But it was HMS.
A great line from The West Wing where Sam Seaborn is arguing a point about John Larroquette's character, the legal counsel guy.
Yeah.
And to make his point, he said, "Were you the secretary for the Yale Gilbert and Sullivan Club?" And John Larroquette goes, "No, but then again, I'm not a girl." it's great comment. I just love that.
Yeah.
That would so be something I said because I'm such a, I saw Mary Poppins this weekend. Did I tell you that? I went to a lavish Broadway musical with Peanut, and we really enjoyed it. So go see that if it comes to.
I was going to worry if you said you went by yourself, but you took your.
Well, I would. I mean, I love the theater. I have been one of the things my parents did right. One of the few things my parents did right in my early development was take me to lots of theater. Every time we cycled back into Northern Virginia, which was often, I was in Northern Virginia from 73 to 75, and then 80 to 83, and then from 85 on. And every time we went back, we would do just tons of Kennedy Center and Ford's Theater and National Theater. Mm. I guess those are the same thing. But I saw Yul Brynner in The King and I. I saw Richard Harris in Camelot. I saw one of the good Annies, one of the original good Annies. And I just ate that shit up. I love live theater.
Did you ever see Johnny Holiday in Finian's Rainbow? Johnny Holiday. Remember Johnny Holiday on WMAL?
No.
Johnny,
no, see,
he was one of these guys.
I never listened to I didn't get until WJFK.
Yeah. I mean, I you know what? I love the theater. I hate musicals. I'm not a big fan of the musical.
Well,
and so but
still
I
haven't
love
watched
the
that 1776 that I sent you, have you?
I haven't. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I sent you that like 2 years ago.
I know.
The great founding father story. Forget that it's a musical for 2 seconds. It's just a great movie. You need to fucking sit down and watch that.
Okay.
I will send it to you again. I'm going to keep sending it to you until you watch it.
All right, good.
Because it's awesome. 1776 with the guy that did Knight Rider's voice.
Oh, yeah. Who the hell was that guy?
Can't remember his name, but he plays John Adams. He's awesome. The guy from fucking St. Elsewhere, that guy.
And does he do a toe-tapping yo-ho-ho kind of song?
Dude, I don't give a fuck what your problem with musicals is. It's a great, great movie. And the guy who does Ben Franklin is out of this world. Howard Da Silva. He was a blacklisted. He ended up on the commie blacklist in the 50s. The McCarthyism thing. He was one of those actors that got blacklisted. He was awesome as Ben. He just is Ben Franklin. He's absolutely Ben Franklin. You've got to watch. If he threw it away or sold it, I will fucking kill you.
Oh, I have not. I have not. But you know, I'm divorced and I'm not living in my house, so it's at my house. It's at my old house.
It's at my house.
Not that I abandon it or anything. I just I haven't cleared out my DVDs out of that place yet.
Lame-o.
I got some of my DVDs out, you know, as like a refugee.
Yeah, the ones you care about.
Yeah. I'm sorry, 1776 didn't fit in the priority mailbox, you know.
Too bad. You're missing out because it's fucking awesome.
I'm sorry.
It's a great
That sounded
movie.
Really douchey of me. Like, I grabbed all the ones I really liked, except
yeah,
for the,
I grabbed my favorite
except
ones.
For the one that you, out of the kindness of your heart, as a good friend, sent to me.
Correct.
Bought, purchased at the store and mailed me, and I
Correct.
Didn't grab it. Oh, God, I'm an asshole. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I, you know, and I will watch it. Yeah, I will. It's on my list. Seriously, it is. As soon as I get it, you know, from my house. Anyway, hey, I'm going to change the subject. Hey, you know,
asshole.
Speaking of Northern
Virginia. At
least
you're honest and didn't pretend like you'd seen it, and then I'd make you, you know, I'd say, what was your favorite part? And then you'd be stuck.
So I like the part when they signed the Declaration. That was my favorite
part.
Well,
you'd have gotten that right.
You know.
Say, when they were, it does happen.
When they penned in the word unalienable in the preamble.
They actually have that discussion, whether it's inalienable or unalienable. Yeah. They actually have an argument about that.
That's good.
See, in the form of,
do they do a tap around it? Do they do like a line,
the
like
songs
line dancing?
Are unbelievable. The music, the opening number is "Sit Down, John," where they're all yelling at John Adams to sit down and shut up because he talks too much and it's too hot. You're missing a classic, classic film.
Okay.
For God's sakes, John, sit down.
That's great. There's a whole song around unalienable.
Sit down, John. Yeah. Sit down, John. For God's sake, John, sit down. And then somebody says, somebody open up a window. John, you're a bore. We've heard this before. So for God's sakes, John, sit down. It's a great song.
Mm, yeah. You know what? I'm on the next plane. Back to the house to grab it.
Fucking go get that. You get somebody to mail it to you. I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
and the
I will.
Song there's a Molasses to Rum to Slaves, a song about the triangle trade, and it will give you the fucking chills.
Okay.
Guy gets up on a desk and sings Molasses to Rum to Slaves about the, you know, who they're having this whole argument about who owns the stink of slavery more, the South, who benefits from the, you know, the slave labor, or the North, the New England states, who, you know, broker in human beings for molasses and, you know, molasses to run to slaves. So who stinketh the most, Boston or Charleston? Fucking great song. Great, great song. I'm going to kick your ass if you don't watch that movie. There must be a Blockbuster somewhere nearby, wherever the fuck. You go find that movie
Netflix.
And watch it on VHS.
Netflix.
Well, I don't think it's available for Watch Me Now, but.
Okay. But you can get it on Netflix, right?
One of our listeners do some research for me. I've been unable to Google this successfully. I want to know what the Netflix, like some movies that are in their Watch Now queue, go away. I want to know why. Like Shawshank has always been in their Watch Now thing, and that's always been a deep comfort to me. That's like having immediate service of meatloaf and mashed potatoes to your face. Like it, just something that make you feel good immediately is Shawshank. I would turn that on any time of day. And now it's no longer in their Watch Now offering. I don't know why they would drop off. That queue should be getting bigger, not smaller. Can you only watch it a certain number of times and then they don't let you anymore? Because that's bullshit.
Yeah. I have no idea.
A bunch of movies that used to be in my Watch Now queue that are just gone. And I want to know what the reasoning is. If, like, some studio found out, oh, my God, it's available, and then they yell and they have to take it off?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Here's a For God's Sake, John, Sit Down from 77. I don't know if you can actually hear
Yes,
that.
This is it.
Mr. Adams?
What you doing up here all by yourself?
Didn't you hear me calling Mr. Adams?
I get to the song here.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut to the chase here. Where's the song?
That all members of...
Yada, yada, yada. There we go.
Yeah, he goes barges down. Well, there's still some talk even in this. He barges in and he says, he talks about Congress being a big pain in the ass.
And that's John Adams?
Yeah.
And he's dashing down these stairs like he's fucking Lance Armstrong?
Well, it's dramatic. He's not Paul Giamatti.
All right, here's the...
Now, there's still some talk coming.
Okay, here we go.
I have come to the conclusion...
All right.
I have come to the conclusion...
See?
...that one useless man is called
a disgrace.
That two are called a law firm...
A law firm.
and that three or more become a Congress.
See, now I'm spoiled from the John Adams miniseries. I'm expecting giant zits and really bad teeth all over these guys. Yeah. Like the realism, like the gritty documentarian, sort of the cinema verite realism of John Adams. And I'm not seeing it here. But I'm going to get an awesome song here in a second.
I have had this Congress.
For 10 years, King
Dizal. I'm going to skip ahead here.
They stopped our trade. See.
It's coming. You're actually lying to me. There is no music in this musical.
It's coming. He has to say something for them to say, for God's sake, John, sit down.
And spilled our blood. And still, this Congress refuses to grant any of my.
This is really John Adams in his high school wrestling weight. I mean, this guy, like John Adams. On independence. He's ripped.
Here comes.
Okay.
Now listen.
Open up a window.
Will you listen to me and forget the window?
Okay.
I say vote yes. Vote yes. Vote for independence.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's making my teeth hurt.
Fuck you, dude. That's awesome. That's history right there. History set the song. If Tea Partiers would watch that fucking movie, they'd be all set.
Yeah, they totally would. They would.
That is an awesome song. And then, boy, you're just going to hate the shit out of this movie.
They'd be all set.
Then he goes outside and he has like a phantasmagorical, like astral projection duet with Abigail back on the farm in Braintree.
Oh, that's good.
So, yeah, you'll fucking hate it to death. Blythe Danner. Who is what's-her-face's mom is Abigail Adams. What's her name? Her mom. Yeah. The one that's married to...
Right. Yeah, I know. Blythe Danner was in, Meet the Parents?
One of those fucking movies.
Gwyneth Paltrow's
mother. Gwyneth Paltrow's mother. Yeah. Bing. Yeah.
There you go.
You're going to hate it, but yeah. I love it. I'm a huge theater fag, and I love musicals.
The Tea Party will be informed about history, and they'll have songs in their head that won't ever leave.
Yeah, well, that's too bad because it's a great song. Then there's they dance around with they get Thomas Jefferson's wife to come up and bang him because he can't write the Declaration, which that is actually ahistorical, I think.
Yeah.
But she comes out. No, I'm sorry. Blythe Danner is Thomas Jefferson's wife. I'm sorry.
Okay.
She is Thomas Jefferson's wife, who also. All of them were named Abigail. Every single woman in the
every character
was
is
named
Abigail. Right.
Every character. So, but I don't know. But so yeah, and they sing. He plays the violin, which is a lovely little song, and they dance around a fountain. It's lovely.
Okay.
Lovely. You must watch it.
I will.
Because I gave it to you as a gift out of the kindness.
I know, and I feel like quite a dick for not
fuck ass
for not having watched it yet.
But you can just go watch John Adams for the 400th time.
Yeah, I will. I will. Because
I'm sure you brought that one with you.
I did. And you know what? I just go back and in 1776, do they have a smallpox inoculation sequence?
I think that ended up on the cutting room floor. But there is, if you get the restored version, if you get the current DVD, they've restored this number that they did called Cool Considerate Men. Which is all the Republicans? Which is all the Republicans in Congress singing a little song about how they're cool, cool conservative men? And Richard Nixon had them cut that scene from the movie. They pre-screened the film for Nixon at the White House, and it was right when he was about to eat a big shit sandwich, and he felt the song was way too anti-Republican and anti-conservative, so he had them cut that whole number from the film. And it's one of the best songs in the musical. So very political.
Yeah.
Politics.
Yeah.
Something you're supposed to be interested in. Great song. Cool conservative men.
Oh, I hate politics.
Oh, being such a dick. I swear to God.
Talk about politics.
You sent me a DVD and told me to watch it. I don't, even if it was something I hated, I'd fucking watch it.
Yeah, I know. And it's, I feel terrible about it. It's just one of those things where I go up to my, my former DVD shelves, as I say bitterly, and I look at them and I go, God damn it, there's 1776 that Elvis sent me.
I'm losing sleep over it.
Yeah. I should have grabbed it as I was dashing away. I did not.
Fleeing your marital home.
That's right, like with the sound, that Scooby-Doo running sound. playing. And I'm out. Pew! Hey, it's Bubble Genius. It's the Bubble Genius Bob and Elvis Show in Pure Products, Pure Genius, Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. Big Valentine's Day specials happening right now at bubblegenius.com. They have their Valentine-inspired collection. Shake your bonbon, wash away your sins with these sweet-smelling mini truffle soaps in three delicious scents. Marshmallow, strawberry, and chocolate. 9 to a heart-shaped box. I mean, they literally look like chocolates. In fact, you might want to put a sign on that says, these are not edible. You wash with these because they look delicious. I'm actually looking at them now, and I'm getting quite hungry. Also, the Love to Love You Baby. These are little romantic heart-shaped baskets. Gives your darling a little bit of everything lovely in there. It's like a variety pack of lovely Valentine's Day soap things. Sexy, of course, we heard about the Sexy Time edible oil. Delicious, and also good over a salad. I'm kidding. Don't put it on your salad, seriously. Sexy Time edible powder as well. Spell it out. Let your beloved know how you feel with their 2.5-inch cherry-scented soap that comes straight from the heart in 5 random colors and phrases. All happening right now at Bubble Genius. By the way, Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable. And their soaps are free of chemical detergents and surfactants, especially at Valentine's Day, because you wouldn't want surfactants on people you love. No.
Cost me my dream date.
That's right. It's Pure Products, Pure Genius, Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
It is. And I'm thinking, you know what? I do this every show, and I end up tormenting our listener. And I say that's singular. we say, well, you know what, let's start doing longer shows, because we always end up going, you know, now we're coming up on an hour and a half, and we always end up doing longer shows anyway, so why don't we just plan and do a longer show? But you know what, I think the show is always better, sorry for the navel gazing, by the way, I think the show is always better if you never quite know how long it's going to be. Does that make any sense at all?
No, it doesn't make sense. Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I mean, we basically just have this thing where we go until our fuse runs out. I mean, we're like, oh, fuck it, nothing else to say now. So yeah. I think it should just be a constantly moving target. But I do think 2 shows a week would be doable.
Yeah. Well, we'll try. We're gonna continue to think about it, and maybe by 2015, we'll finally make a decision on whether or not we're going to do 2 shows a week.
By then I'll be doing the show from fucking, you know, outside Starbucks, like with my laptop, because they won't even let me in Starbucks because I can't afford a cup of coffee.
And then I'll be around the corner in my cardboard box.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with my copy
nice
of
cardboard boxes out there.
1776 on the in my still in the shrink wrap.
Only thing that'll get you through your day is singing refrains of "For God's Sakes, John, Sit Down."
What's a piddle, twiddle, and resolve? I'll sing
that. Twiddle and resolve.
Yeah. Speaking of history, there was and I was really glad to see this, wrap up the show with this, I think. Walmart got its ass kicked in Northern Virginia. They're not going to put a giant superstore on the wilderness battlefield in Northern Virginia.
Civil War, yeah.
I mean, I think people who are not from Virginia or the Washington, D.C. area, or even from the East Coast for that matter, don't really realize that, you know, you had these epic and brutally awful battles that took place, a lot of them in Northern Virginia. I mean,
Manassas.
Yeah. I mean, most of it happened in Northern Virginia. And what you have is this conflict in Northern Virginia between the insane Washington, D.C. sprawl and an actual, I mean, really big time historical events. And fortunately, in this case, I mean, if you travel down 95 south of the Beltway, it's like one gigantic, you know, kind of Home Depot, Target, Starbucks strip mall sprawl after the next. Yeah, at every single exit. And you're and so that's running into a lot of those, especially late war battlefields, including the Wilderness, Spotsylvania, Cold Harbor, North Anna,
Chancellorsville.
And so what happens is they're constantly having to fight off. I'm talking historians and preservationists having to fight off guys like Walmart coming in and wanting to build a superstore right where people, right where history happened. And what's remarkable is that there's not a larger popular outcry about this.
Yeah, no one gives a shit. There's the Civil War reenactors and a handful of historians and then armchair guys like you and me. And otherwise, people could give a shit.
Yeah.
It's like, where can we get cheap things made in China versus how many more Civil War battlefield gift shops can I see?
Yeah. And what's crazy about this stretch of land called the Wilderness is that there were actually two battles that took place in generally the same area. And it was Chancellorsville, as you said, which was earlier in the war, which is right. It was the last battle before Gettysburg. It was early 1863.
1863.
It was May of 1863. And then the next big battle was Gettysburg. And so after Gettysburg, the Union Army changed hands, or Lincoln brought in Grant. And Grant started this basically a war of attrition where he just started pummeling the Confederates.
Just wearing them down.
Yeah. On through Virginia, just chasing them down, pushing them down through Virginia in a series of what could basically be termed as stalemate battles. Yeah. But it didn't matter because Grant just kept moving forward. And they were very bloody battles because it was just like they were just beating their heads against walls. They were beating their heads against each other and just pummeling each other and not caring what the outcome was at that point. It didn't matter. Oh, we won this. Huzzah. Right. No, they just kept going. And so the Wilderness was the first of those battles in the, it was called the Overland Campaign. Right. And so it was the first time Grant fought against Robert E. Lee. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially on the Chancellorsville ground.
Yep.
So you have two major, major pivotal battles in the Civil War happening in this ground. And they want to put a fucking Walmart there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the Wilderness alone, 30,000 Americans were killed, injured, or went missing.
Is that right? 30,000?
30,000.
It was
185,000 Union soldiers. Oh, wait. Yeah, that's 100, total. It was 185,000 total soldiers fought for 3 days on that ground.
Fuck that war, man. It's just unbelievable.
Unbelievable, yeah.
And I guess every country really goes through its civil war period, I guess, eventually, where two opposing sides have to kick each other in the ass. But Jesus Christ, what a just an awful thing.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, I just constantly heartbroken by the fact of the timing of Lincoln's assassination. I mean, 5 days. Yeah. He didn't even get to fucking enjoy it through a weekend.
That's right.
You know? He didn't even have like a whole week to put his feet up and be like, he was just so beaten down. That last picture taken of him, the one with the cracked plate.
Yeah, and he's
that runs right through his head. It looked like he'd aged. I mean, he had.
Yeah.
Aged like 100 years in those four.
Yeah.
Just, and that was one of the best points that red letter media made about that fucking Revenge of the Sith or whatever, about the war. If I could get my Star Wars on one more time before we're out. But he made that point about how the Clone Wars did nothing. They were talking about how the clones were just expendable and they weren't creating widows like Lincoln was worried about, you know, and Lincoln was just so absolutely torn up by these decisions he was making, just ate him to pieces. The carnage that was coming out of this war and the consequence of it, you know, it just ate him up. And that's something I'll never forgive George Bush for, as much as his intentions, him personally, his intentions in Iraq may have been whatever. I don't know. I'm not as big a cynic, but I'll never forgive him for just being so cavalier about and showing absolutely no personal torment over it in any way, in any way.
Yeah.
Never showing any personal torment. I mean, that's at least with Lyndon Johnson in the last of the wars you could compare it to. There are pictures of Johnson just getting eaten up by it, by Vietnam, you know, just really carrying it hard. And that's something that Bush never did. So fuck you, George Bush.
Yeah. Now watch this putt.
Yeah, now watch this drive. Watch me drive. Yeah. Fucking douche. We just never had any personal, you know, just never showed that he was carrying the weight of it.
Right.
Because that's what modern war has come to. It's, you know, it might as well be a Clone Wars kind of thing where every troop, because it's so sterile now and it's so, the numbers are so comparatively low in any modern, you know, conflict. You're sitting, you know, Bill Hicks had that great joke when the first Gulf War started about how these guys were just, you know, they're teenage kids playing video games. They're looking at the manual. Hey, what does this one do? Push that button. He goes, shh, and he goes, oh, cool. Now, what does this one do? Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the absolute truth about modern warfare is that it's a video game.
Yeah.
So, boy, that's a huge rant. I went all over the place. Yeah. But, yeah. But let me tell you, there's no better soft serve on Earth than the soft serve place at Appomattox. So,
Just
Appomattox soft serve and hot dogs, best place in town.
You mean you actually found food at Appomattox? I was at Appomattox, and there's like a house there and a small museum.
And a cannon. Yeah.
And nothing else. Nothing else. Like for miles, except for maybe there's a filling station with a bunch of scary-looking rednecks in there.
Yeah, but see, now you're complaining. See, you're complaining about that's what our historic site should be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree.
The thing. Yeah. And you're like, well, goddamn, I couldn't even get any good soft serve.
I'm not asking.
Like, which
for
is it?
I'm not asking for it. I'm just saying that. How did you get soft serve?
I was joking.
Oh, okay.
That's what I do.
Mm, that's good. Well, so just closure on the Walmart thing. They actually have finally dropped their plans to put that superstore there. If I wasn't clear about that. And then as far as Lincoln goes, I'm backtracking through your rant. Lincoln was the happiest he ever was, I think, after Appomattox. And he really only got to savor it. In fact, that photograph you were talking about with the cracked plate, he's kind of smiling in that.
Oh, yeah. And so it's just sort of wearily, just like, oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, can you imagine the sense of relief, just the sense of utter relief that had finally resolved?
Yeah. And then 5 days later, he gets a bullet in the brain.
Yeah, he's at the theater enjoying a musical, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
That was a comedy. No?
No, it wasn't a musical.
Yes, it was a musical. It was just a comedy.
Yes,
Our American Cousin. Is what it
was. Our American Cousin, that's
Our
right.
American Cousin, that's what I say.
Have you read Assassination Vacation by Sarah Vowell?
No.
You got to check that book out. You'll love it.
I will.
She goes on a literal assassination vacation for the first three presidents that were assassinated. And she spends the bulk of the book is on Lincoln. You'll really dig it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to send it to you because you won't fucking read it, but you should.
Right. Well, you know, I did read something similar, which is Confederates in the Attic, if you're interested in the Civil War.
Yeah,
it's one of the best. One of the best books about the American Civil War is called Confederates in the Attic. And he does there's a whole chapter where the author goes through and goes with a reenactor to all the, does something called a Civil Wargasm. Which is all at once hilarious and a little disturbing.
Sad and
that they actually refer to something as horrible as the Civil War with a gasm suffix on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's both delightful and upsetting. Oh my God. So hey, make sure to buy all your soap for Valentine's Day at bubblegenius.com.
Yes.
If not, I will come to your house and I will smack you. And I think we're going to do a fundraiser on the blog this next week, and we're going to be giving away Bob and Elvis soaps as a premium for the fundraiser.
Oh, dear.
That's something to look forward to. People will be washing their private parts with our faces, which I'm sure people have been looking forward to do for quite a time. Our listener will be enjoying that quite thoroughly. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. Drive safely, and we'll see you next Thursday. Take care.
Bye-bye.